The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today, the chef, the owner, and winemaker of, is it Hessland County or Country Inn? Hessland Country Inn. I'm joined by Frank Arig. Frank, how do I pronounce your location?
It is Hessland Country Inn, and the name of a winery is Schatz Winery.
Yep.
Schatz, just a brief history. Our family immigrated from Germany in 1982. My parents started the family business in 1984. So basically it was a farm and they started adding buildings to that, the farm space, which is now what you see, the inn. We have approximately 40 acres of land that we sit on here. So the term Schatz is the German word for darling. It is also a literal translation to treasure. But in German, we use that as sort of a term of endearment, like my dear, my honey. Mm-hmm. And that is what Schatz winery is to the inn. It's our little darling vineyard that is starting to blossom and starting to produce fruit. And from the fruit, we are now slowly starting to produce wines.
That has to be exciting. So I'm curious, and you gave me three of them here. One is a blend, one's a red blend, and then the other red is a Marquette, and then a Frontenac Blanc. And for people who don't know, these are considered cool climate varietals. We will get into these grapes and in wines in a second. But I was wondering if you could tell me just a little bit about your journey from running an inn to now being a winemaker.
So let me back up slightly, Matt, not to put myself down, but I guess I'll be realistic. I am the wine, let's call it wine assistant. I would be the cellar assistant winemaker would definitely be a stretch. But let me back up. I went to the University of Guelph. We studied BCom there. And during that time, we were very fortunate to spend a semester in France. And so we immersed ourselves in many things, including maybe perhaps one too many shenanigans. But we also learned an awful lot about wine. And that was where I really first sort of started gaining an appreciation for wine. Certainly, learning about appellation systems, different styles, the folklore of wine. We had a great professor by the name of Ron Subden, who just lived and breathed this, all things relating to wine. So he made things very relatable to us. He made it very interesting, even though, of course, it's very scientific. But that really sort of caught my attention. So the other main thing that came out of that is where I met my wife, Elizabeth. At the time, of course, she wasn't my wife, but a number of years down the road, we reconnected again. So those were a couple of pivotal moments, in my life. So fast forward back to Canada, we came back. I finished university and then moved back to Germany for a couple of years to complete my chef's papers. Part of that was just to, I guess, reconnect with my heritage a little bit, brush up on my German. I worked with a hotel group by the name of Kempinski just outside of Frankfurt and spent a couple of years there. There again, we had the opportunities to, on occasion head down to the Rheingau and some of those beautiful areas to do a lot of, again, at that point in time, and even now, I mean, Riesling, of course, is the grape of choice there, or was, and to a certain degree, it still is. That's what we identify those regions with, and got a very, a much of an appreciation for that style and sort of, learning about, when we associate styles with, what are we looking for in grapes and what are we getting from the terroir? So again, it's always sidelines into the wine a little bit. Then I moved around a little bit. I came back. I worked at a Whistler for a season. I worked back in Switzerland for a season. I went to Australia for a stint. And then I came back to the inn around 2000, 2001. And then Elizabeth and I got married in 2002 and she joined the family business, and we've been part of it ever since. So the The wine aspect probably started about 9 or 10 years ago. The county had been doing some, had done research and had a number of different people from Niagara that were up and had done climate studies and done some soil studies. But at the end of it, some of us decided, that even though we do a lot of studies, we need to put something in the ground to see what will come of that. So in going back and forth with within the county and then going to Niagara to meet with different people. Again, I will say this, I find myself very fortunate, or our family fortunate, that we've met the people over the last number of years that have helped us and guided us to get us to where we are today, Lloyd Schmidt being one of them. And I would call him one of the, pioneers of grape growing here in Ontario. Fortunately, Lloyd passed away in 2019. Both his sons are affiliated with Vineland Estates. And he, I will say quite honestly, he kind of helped me take off the rose-colored glasses to the wine industry. He kind of sat me down and said, okay, here's how this is going to go. You're going to start this slow and steady, and you're not just going to, I'm going to plant 100 acres and this is all going to be wonderful. He kind of, he goes, you need to grow into this.
What were your expectations, and what did Lloyd slap you silly and give you reality?
Right. I think the biggest thing was we were at a meeting at one point and, we're like, plant 100 acres of grapes. And he's like, well, that's great. And he goes, but where's your market and who are you going to sell it to? And the room kind of fell silent. And, and that was probably one of the biggest takeaways is, of course, again, it's very interesting. I think the wine industry is certainly some mystique and that's initially, obviously that's what pulled me in, but then he very quickly grounded me in the sense of, here's what it's going to cost you to plant the vines. Here's what it's going to cost you to tie your land. Here's what equipment costs are going to look like. Here's what your labor cost is going to look like. And a lot of this, because we are a small vineyard, much of what we do is hand labor. There's only so much that can be mechanized. And so we rely on certain times of the year, work crews that will come in to help with pruning, to help with tying, things like that. So having said that, that didn't dissuade me. What it did was we just all of a sudden slowed things right down because I was like, it's just going to explode. But the one thing that's always kept me, as much as we wanted that to grow, my approach to many things in my mind is like, we just got to do this. But then the reality of my brain sets in and says, whoa, Frank, you got to slow down. Let's look at this again. Let's see how we're going to get here. So we did spend some time traveling around Ontario to sort of all of the, let's call the main wine growing regions within Ontario. And all throughout that time, people were very receptive and open and sharing their, their ideas, their challenges perhaps. And the one thing that we were looking to do here is we are not looking to compete with another region in Ontario. We're not trying to mimic a Merlot from Niagara, or we're not trying to do, whites that are grown there. I mean, we've got a whole different, our climate is different, our soils are different, our growing season is different. And we are looking to establish our own growing region and own wine region in Ontario. And I mean, we are, we're just in, I would say, obviously in the infancy stages, but we have a number of wineries that have come online over the last few years that have been very well received. And again, even those people, again, we've been very fortunate in having connected with those people, and they've all been very open to sharing their knowledge with us. Maelstrom Winery, Dark Horse, which is not far from us, and Cornerfield, which is now just opened last year as well. And then there are a number of growers in the area as well. So, but the one thing that we initially, when we started out, was, that we knew that we may have challenges growing traditional, what we'd call traditional vinifera varieties in this region. Not so much because of, we still have beautiful long summers, but we have still the potential, and we have had extremely cold winters here right along the lake. We're less than half a kilometer off the lake, which has its positives and its negatives, depending on the time of year. We're indefinitely now that we're into this business of growing grapes, I will say, or the agriculture side of things. I definitely pay attention to the weather a lot more. Yeah. I now understand when we're talking about mesoclimates or microclimates, which a number of years ago I never paid attention to, and have learned a lot of that. But I mean, we continue to learn, and I would consider myself to be a novice in this compared, just the establishment of the grapes and, you know, knowing, okay, that some of these varieties will start producing in year two, some of them will start producing in year three, but again, then choosing those varieties again, and Lloyd was very instrumental in helping us with that. And again, really what it came down to was just knowing that, you know what, we have extremely cold winters here and you need to plant something that is going to survive the winter. It doesn't mean it's going to kill the plant, but you know, you don't want to kill off those dormant buds. So most of the varieties that we've planted, you know, they're cold tolerant to minus 28, minus 30, minus 32. So Petite Pearl, Marquette, Frontenac Blanc, Frontenac Gris, La Cresson. And then we do have some Riesling we planted. Again, of course, that's not a cool climate varietal, but because of our heritage, we felt that, of course, that we needed to plant some Riesling.
With the German background. So tell me about Huron County. You sort of did, but the main difference you would say where you are versus say Niagara is not necessarily the heat, but just the cold is so much more extreme, which is why there's no point doing Merlot, because it might get destroyed, or even if it doesn't, it's not going to ripen to its full potential.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, those varieties that we have are somewhat earlier ripening varieties. I mean, we finished off because, again, the weather here, I mean, like in other parts of Ontario, once you get into October, all of a sudden things can go topsy-turvy very quickly. So, I mean, we are, again, we're still early days into this. So we tend to be maybe a little more cautious and not be as experimental and let's leave them hang a little longer. Let's let that acid drop out a little bit longer. We're more on the cautious side. You know what? Let's get that fruit off, so that we can start making some wine. So, I mean, we finished harvesting on the 28th of September this year. Last year, we finished on October 22nd, which was almost a month later.
Wow.
And it was bitter cold that last day that we picked that day. And I said, this year, we are not waiting that long to pick the fruit, right? So, and the other part of all of this, I mean, which has been key is making a connection with someone who's passionate about helping us turn the grapes that we harvest into, you know, high quality wine. So through Maelstrom's, which again, one of the first winery in Huron County, the Lonsborough family, we're working with, and are still working with a gentleman by the name of Derek Barnett. And I had spoke with them and they had said, well, why don't you reach out to Derek if he's up this way, maybe he's interested in working with you as well. And we met in 2017. And, you know, right away, I think, you know, again, I mean, knowledge is one thing and knowing people that have the skill set, but also you need to be able to, of course, get along with people and have a good feeling about them. And then right off the hop, when I met Derek, I mean, this man is salt of the earth. He's super highly knowledgeable, very passionate, but just a very easygoing individual, you know? And so, and his approach, you know, if I've sort of gathered what he's been sort of, looking to do is less intervention as far as the winemaking process goes. So we have, we don't use any enzymes or SO2s when we're crushing the grapes or, you know, pressing them out. It's to try and, you know, you can sometimes get higher yields with that, but we're trying to not mask, I guess, the natural characteristics of the grapes themselves. And, you know, and again, quite honestly, we are now into our sort of what I would say our second official vintage. So we are still, I think what I would say is established, even though you might read in books, you know, okay, well, this grape has these characteristics and these characteristics. But for me, it's okay. We're growing them in our clay loam soil here along Lake Huron, which may be very different than some of the areas that they've grown them in the Midwestern United States. So we are still learning and trying to, what I would say, describe what our terroir is, you know? So, and trying to come up with you know, those care. I think we still have a couple of vintages to go that we can say consistently, you know, here is a typical nose on the Petite Pearl. Here's a typical nose on the Marquette. You know, here's that mouthfeel that you're going to find. And of course, it's going to vary every year, but there's going to be some typical characteristics that are going to, I think, consistently come through no matter how we work with the wine.
Well, then let's talk about the wines for a second. I have three of them. And the first, we'll start with the white, the 2018 vintage Frontenac Blanc. And yes. I'll give you my quick notes, yes. And then love to get your thoughts, yes, on the wine and what this grape, what you hope it's going to be in your region. But I got like a little bit of cooked nuts, dry wood spice, orange peel and lemon on the nose. The taste, very similar to the palate. There's this sort of honeyed coating thing going on, a little bit of tropical fruit. I was getting a little bit of like a slightly oxidized, but not in a bad way, and maybe even just a touch of like Fino sherry. So those were sort of some of the things I got in the white.
Yeah. And this wine here we had in oak for, I believe, 3 months. So that would have, explain some of those characteristics, I think, that you're picking up, you know.
A lot of depth, by the way, on this. There's a lot of depth going on this wine.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, and part of that is, again, I mean, I think any wine is can be consumed on its own. But of course, we're also looking at, we're looking at the culinary side of things when we make the wines, and, looking to, again, and this is a whole new experience for us, is now we actually have our own wine to say, hey, we're now pairing our wine with our food, which is again, somewhat daunting in a way. And I know it sounds kind of silly. I'm like, oh, you're a chef, so what's the big deal? But, now it's like, this is all of our own product now that we're pairing together, right?
So yeah, there's more pressure there. What would I pair with this wine?
That one we had, we've done with some fish dishes as well, even lightly grilled fish, light pasta dishes, that very little, not a huge amount of cream. We've also done that with, again, with some, like some fish from the lakes with some salads that have worked very nicely with that. Almost like we've done it with a ginger, sesame type dressing with a little bit of citrus at the end of that. That pairs very nicely. I mean, this is all stuff that we're, and honestly, this pandemic that we're currently in, it has allowed us to shift. It's forced us, obviously, to some extent, to shift the business. I mean, a large part of our business is events and banquets and weddings, which obviously weren't happening this year. So we had, as we knew the wine was coming on, it's done a few things for us. It's changed the perception of, what people are expecting here to some extent. It's also allowed us to change the experience. I mean, the vineyard, for obviously, traditional, we say wineries, and even for us it's a form of agriculture, and it's where our production happens, but it's also become, a place for people now to dine. We had our vineyards licensed early on in the season, and because of, again, the restrictions, it of course forced people outside. In the past, people would come in, they walk the gardens a little bit, they come in, they eat, and well, that's great. Now with what's happened, it's allowed people to enjoy our facility in a whole different way, and to be able to tell them, here you are sitting in our vineyard in Huron County, and you could be, people would make the comment, and I don't want to sound biased, they'd be like, I could be anywhere in the world right now. And I'm like, yeah, but you're in Huron County sitting in our vineyard having dinner, enjoying our wine. I mean, that to me is
that's amazing. Not bad. That's pretty that's pretty damn good. I imagine the view is great as well.
Yes.
So before we move,
We're within a 5-minute walking distance to the lake, but anyways, I'm sorry, Matt, you go ahead.
No, that's great. No, by the way, at the end, I want to hear more about the inn. I just want to get a couple notes on the white, and then I want to move on to the red. Yes. But, for people that have misconceptions of what cool climate varietals, but we'll stick with the Frontenac Blanc. Frontenac, I'll never say that right. What would you say for Huron County, for your region, not Midwest United States, but for you, where you are, what are the typical characteristics of this white before we move on to the red?
That one, I would say, again, it's like you're saying, there is some fruity notes at the beginning. I think that's what we're trying to find typically. Again, there's a nice middle range, I would say, a mouth finish, and a nice balance of acid and a little bit of sweetness at the end of this, and again, so it has to me, you can, like, again, I mean, like any wine, but certainly these are, you can easily consume this on its own or it would pair nicely, like I said, with some lighter fish pasta style dishes, you know. And I mean, this is like Maelstrom's, I believe, were the first ones that had planted it in Ontario. So it is just, again, these are extremely, when we look at the age of grape varietals, these are, you know, very new varietals that are just coming into and that are just gaining some speed and some traction, you know, within the sort of Ontario wine community.
So then moving on to the Marquette, the 2018, the grape is Marquette, not where Dwayne Wade went to college. No one's going to get that sports joke. I don't even know why I made that.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to get that one.
But. No, it's okay. That literally, there'll be four people listening that'll get that line. But more black and blue fruit on the nose.
Yes.
A little bit of like a raisiny sort of thing going on.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I've found, and I mean, I think that's part of the interest of wine, and I don't consume wine on a daily basis by any means, but the one thing that has always intrigued me about wine is sometimes to me is the more interesting part of it is the nose, more so than any other part of the wine. And a part of that to me is it's I guess to some extent life experience, and it always brings back memories of certain things. And this wine here, the first time that we were smelling it, it just reminded me, it was my grandmother's stewed plum jam from, you know, 35 years ago, done in the cast iron pot back home in Germany in the kitchen, in the oven, right? It was just, that's the first thing I was like, oh my God, this is my grandmother's jam. You know, we kind of laugh, but, you know, so that's part of, again, the interest that, you know, that always comes back, because I mean, with wine and certainly obviously other spirits and beverages as well, but certainly wine more so than any other. I mean, there are, to me, again, it there's a lot of, you know, little life journeys and experiences that sometimes, you know, that are that the least unexpected thing. And it just reminds you.
That is cool. And you're absolutely right. I mean, smell is such a memory kick in the ass sort of thing. You smell something, immediately you get transported.
Yes. And whether that's good or bad, right? But you'll remember it immediately.
Oh, absolutely. Light and juicy. I get a little deeper. I wrote down blueberry syrup, and I don't mean it is a sweet, heavy wine at all, but I get a little of this blueberry thing and a little bit of woody rustic as well. Yes. So that was sort of my notes for the, what's it called?
I mean, they kind of, they've likened it to, I shouldn't say likened it to, but they, you know, a Latin, I shouldn't say lesser, a cousin to Pinot Noir, right? It's a medium body, a little bit lighter on the end, right? So again, for us, you know, our mainstay of cuisine is still a European German background. So we do spätzle, we do red cabbage, we do schnitzel, we do roulade. And so stewed dishes like that are maybe not, you know, don't have a lot of like char on them. I mean, those are the kinds of dishes that you could pair very nicely with a wine such as this, you know, where it's not overly oaked. Although it did spend time in oak, you know, and we use for the most part, recuperate barrels, you know, which again, everyone has their, you know, their style of oak that they like. Right. And as you well know, I mean, you talk to 10 different people, they're going to give you 10 different opinions on how you could do this. So a part of me, we're still, you know, trying to find that road of, you know, where exactly do we take this? You know, but again, like I said, our biggest part of this and what we're trying to work through is I think right now, you know, less intervention for us is better, to really see what that fruit can, you know, produce without, you know, too many additions or changes to it.
Before we talk about the final one, I'm curious because you mentioned Riesling, and I love Riesling. A German Riesling to me is one of the great joys of wine, but it's a hard wine to sell even today. Yes. Same thing with like, say something like Gewürztraminer. Yes. The consumer can get nervous about trying things out of their comfort zone. It's Chardonnay, Pinot Grigio, or give me the Cabernet. How tough is it for you guys, because you're going now trying to sell a little bit more non-traditional grapes. Again, these cooler climate varietals. Yes. That you're not going to see in a lot of traditional growing areas where the winters aren't as bad as they are in Huron County. So how tough is that for you guys?
Well, you know what? Part of that, I think we're still working through some of that, quite honestly, Matt, to I wouldn't say a challenge, but it is, and we knew this going in that, you know, part of it, and I had to change my mindset a little bit because I was always like, we are not comparing these grape varietals to anything else. We are selling them as they are. And then, you know, the staff would come to me and say, Frank, we need to come up with some comparisons because people want something to compare it to. And I'm like, yes, I know. Oh, okay. Right. So we fold in, but, yes, I guess there are, we've done our due diligence and we haven't rushed any of this to market so that what we're putting out now, even though it may be foreign to people, is a high quality product. So it's, as much as we're, you know, trying, we do make slight assimilations to, you know, more traditional varieties, but we're also, you know, again, we continue to learn and work with the staff to be able to educate the consumer in a positive way so that they are willing to try them. And again, the people that are genuinely interested, and we've seen a number of people come through us throughout the summer. I think a lot of people we wouldn't have seen otherwise had we not had wine that we could offer to them, you know, that are genuinely interested in learning about these new varietals, you know, and again, being, and I think right now, yes, that is a challenge, but I think going forward, it's only a bigger opportunity to make our area stand out from other areas. We're some of the first ones that are growing some of these varietals. Of course, some of that's being grown in Northern Ontario already as well. But again, it's really not caving to the, you know, well, we're kind of like this or we're kind of like this. It's like, no, these are the varieties that we're growing and this is what you should be expecting. And again, it's going to take a little bit of time, but even in the short amount of time, I mean, throughout the summer, we did, you know, several hundred tastings of people that would come in. And, you know, again, we're surprised. We shouldn't, on one hand says we shouldn't be surprised, but again, the comments overall were always very positive. I mean, and wine is something that's very subjective, you know, I mean, everyone has their opinion on it, of course. I mean, that's why we're talking today, you know, and I think, you know, you can't, you know, sometimes you get caught off guard if someone has something negative to say about it because you're like, well, how dare can you say something negative? This wine is beautiful. But I mean, at the end of the day, of course, everyone has their opinion, right? So.
Yeah. Well, and then for you, it's also that fine line between respecting these wines, the grape, the terroir, and selling these wines on their merit. But then also there's the marketing education side and some ways to pull people in. Like you mentioned about the second wine, it's a cousin of Pinot Noir. Even saying that, at the very least, people sort of have a database of knowledge of Pinot.
Yes.
So like, okay, I'll try the Marquette because I'm familiar with this other thing.
Yeah. That's right.
Last wine is a Petit Pearl. It's like, it's a blend of a bunch of your grapes.
Petit Pearl is its own varietal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
It is its own varietal. Yes. Yeah.
Developed, and that's the final one, the 15. What's the it's on the bottle. What's that?
Yeah. 1535.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this was technically our first vintage, 2017, 1535. Again, you'll notice. So the numbers and names. So we're using some of our family history. We're using, again, some words and associations that are relevant to us, numbers that are relevant to us. In this case, 1535, was the 15th, the day we harvested these grapes was the 15th anniversary of Liz and our wedding anniversary.
Oh.
And 35 was 35 years ago that day my mother and I immigrated to Canada. So that's where the number 1535 comes from. And it's a very limited, we have a very small amount of that. It was a very small harvest. So again, Masuko, just briefly, I know I'm kind of jumping all over the place, is the Japanese word for sun. And our son is involved in martial arts. So this wine particularly was dedicated to our son, Sebastian.
Oh, cool.
And then the 1984 was 2019. Schatz Winery was formed. And 1984 was when Hessenland was formed. So again, the numbers, everything has a significance. And we have my sister-in-law, who is our resident wordsmith and storyteller. We will collaborate, and she will, you know, we get the ideas flowing, and she brings ideas to the table. And so as our selection of wines grows, so will the stories, and the stories will continue to evolve as well. So
cool. So again, yeah, for the listener, the 1984, that was the first wine, the Frontenac Blanc, the Moussuco, that was the Marquette, that was the second red. Yes. And now we're moving on to the third red, Petit Pearl, the 1535 vintage 2017. Yes. And if I was doing a cousin, I might first go down a little bit the Syrah path. There's pepper, blue fruit on the on the nose. I get spice. Yes. I get more blue fruit, blueberry jam, maybe a little bit of like olive on the palate. That's sort of what I get on the third wine. Yeah. I'd love to get your thoughts.
Yeah, no, and you're right. You're right on that, Matt. And this we planted with the intent of, as far as our own vineyard goes, this would be those are the two reds that we've planted. And this is what we, as far as we are concerned, and what we've planted, our most full-bodied red, certainly a lot more structure there than the Marquette. And again, even the nose initially, we've had a chance to, you know, taste some Petite Pearl and over the last few years. And there was always a sort of not a floral nose, but it was almost begonias or something that was, it seemed kind of off, but I mean, it seemed like it was just the typical characteristics of the Petite Pearl. But now this particular vintage here, we had a dinner a couple of weeks ago and we ended up serving it with flank steak.
Yeah.
Grilled flank steak. And on the opposite end of the plate, we actually did a braised eye of round. So two different preparations of the meat on the same plate, but we're able to pull different characteristics from that wine to work with both of those completely different preparation styles. And the one thing I noticed, and there was on this one, the nose on this to me came across as like saddle leather. And I never, again, it was something we had, my father was into horses, loved horses, had a passion for horses. And we did about 2 months ago, the 2019 vintage of Petite Pearl, which is still in barrel right now. We had pulled it out and we did just a very small tasting of it. But that nose came through again. And I'm like, oh my God, maybe this is going to be that typical characteristic nose that we're going to start seeing on the Petite Pearl from vintage to vintage. But I know, again, it was kind of exciting because, again, it tied me to something that was familiar to me. It brought back a lot of memories. And, you know, again, it didn't make it seem as foreign anymore. You know, again, we're still, this fruit itself has got some of the most intense color that I've ever seen in any reds. When you take these grapes and you crush them in your hand, the garnet red that's in there, it's just unbelievable.
I like the saddle, the leather there. That that absolutely comes through. Frank, it must be, I mean, this is interesting for you because most of the people, the winemakers I talk to, they've been doing it for well over a decade, sometimes 20 or longer. But you're more in the early parts of the journey with these vines, these grapes. I mean, this, you know, you've only have a couple vintages. Where do you want to be in the next, like, or I guess this, what do you expect these wines to be in the next 5-7 years?
I think my hope, and again, I mean, right now and I think that's part of the exciting part is because we're, you know, I don't want to sound overly dramatic, but we're kind of in ground zero with a lot of the wineries that are in this area that have all planted around the same time. We've all planted within
you
a year
are.
Or two of one another.
But that's, sorry to interrupt, that's not dramatic. That's absolutely where you are. You guys are learning about the terroir and the weather and the trellising and the grapes that's reacting right. to things. Like this is all, even though it's a couple of years, it's all still new. It's very exciting.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, again, every year we learn something new, something that we should change, something that worked, something that didn't work. So I think initially for me, you know, again, it's establishing really to a point where we are comfortable describing what is our terroir here, and then this is what we're going to see in those grape varietals. And of course, we're looking to get to see more of an acceptance, I guess, if we will, across the market of the grape varietals that we're growing. I mean, everyone that is involved in this area now that is in the winery industry, whether they're just growers or whether they are actually wineries, you know, that are up and running already. I mean, everyone is really putting their best foot forward. So for myself personally, it's, and for our business, it's just continuing to, you know, every year, I guess, there, you know, I don't know if you, improve is the right word, but make sure that we are consistent in what we're doing. Of course, every vintage is going to be different, but to really put Huron County and this side, the west coast of Ontario, as we like to say, on the map, and not as an as a continuing and emerging region, but an exciting region that people look forward to, because they're going to find wines that they're not going to find anywhere else in Ontario, and maybe other parts of North America, right? So, and I mean, we've got the backdrop to our area is absolutely gorgeous. Even though, I mean, we live in probably some of the most productive agriculture farmland in all of Canada, you know, from a cash cropping standpoint. And so, of course, we do have the soils that are more than adequate and suitable to growing these kinds of varietals. But again, it will take, I personally, again, that's just my sort of, you know, humble opinion on that, is going to take a few years to establish that. So I don't see, I mean, personally ourselves, I don't see ourselves going to like becoming a 50,000 case winery. That's not the intent. The intent is to, you know, I mean, if we get to, once we get to full production, this is our first year that all of our vines are producing. So we planted between 2015 to 2018. So this year was the first time we got a crop off the Riesling. The La Cresson is the first time. So again, this is like, these are all, again, it's super exciting, because I mean, this is our first fruit coming off. It's just gone through fermentation. You know, you're starting to get some initial hints of what's happening in there, and right, and what are we going to end up with? So the anticipation right now for me is probably the more exciting thing. And again, the momentum that the area is gaining. So I think you're going to see in the next, again, there's the Keitley family up in Bayfield that's got a vineyard that are planning and adding a winery in. So, I mean, just the corridor of Highway 21, which travels along, you know, north and south of the shoreline of Lake Huron. There are now ourselves, Cornerfield Winery, just up the road from us. And so, again, it's part of not only developing what we're doing here for ourselves, but as people become online, again, just continue to grow that destination. And I mean, again, if there's anything that the pandemic has taught us, I mean, it has, I hate to use the word forced, but it has had forced people within Ontario to discover their own backyard and see what is within my own backyard of 2 to 3 hours. I don't need to go that far. We saw so many people coming out of the urban centers that had never been here before, and that were like, oh my God, this is absolutely gorgeous out here. I've never been here, and we will definitely see them again. And the fact that we are now able to, you know, say, oh, come walk through our vineyard, come stay for dinner, you know, come over, stay overnight. And oh yeah, by the way, that is our own wine that you're sampling as well, that we're pairing with locally sourced products and food. I mean, to me, again, I know it's, I don't know, it never gets old, I suppose. It continues to evolve, and it is very, very exciting.
Yeah, it's funny. It is one of the unintended consequences of COVID-19 is now, especially like, say, people from Toronto, and yes. On this podcast, I get it all the time. Oh, I don't want to drink Ontario wine. Well, a lot of that is eroding, and now people are like, oh yeah, I love Chardonnay from the county, and I love Cab Franc from Niagara, and now hopefully Huron County is like, there's these different grapes that I'm not as familiar with, but wow, they produce some really good wine as well. Right. And that's sort of one of the unintended consequences. It just opens the mind of the Ontario and the Toronto wine drinker. Frank, before I let you go, tell me about Heisenland Inn. Tell people why they need to come and visit you guys.
Well, we are, again, I mean, we are, you know, one of the gems of our county, of course, but I mean, it's not us, it's everyone around us. But I mean, we've, like I said, we have a very unique product, again, being our European background, you know, working with our sort of traditional food items, mixing those with locally sourced food items, beautiful accommodations. The summertime, of course, is the time to come out here to enjoy the beaches. The local beaches, the Grand Bend is just south of us. Bayfield is just north of us. You know, and again, it is a I think still to some extent a hidden gem of Ontario. I mean, so many people, like I said, even this summer again, that come out here and that are just blown away by the scenery, the quality of the services and amenities, obviously at our facility, but also the area in itself. As I said before, all of our partners that are in this together, I believe again, are putting their, you know, their best foot forward to, you know, continue to put this, this place on the map. So, you know, hessenland.com, look that up. We are, our winery side of things is still under construction, but our Facebook page and our Instagram is, you know, very current. We've got some very motivated, excited team members that are, you know, keeping me on top of the social media game, because I certainly tend to fall behind in those things, to keep people up to date on what we're currently and what we're always doing and what we're planning on doing. So, I mean, this is to have an opportunity to put this out on a podcast for me. It's pretty exciting. I mean, it was, I'll be honest with you, I was a little bit stressed the last few days, because I was like, I don't know. I mean, I know it's just a conversation, but I really appreciate the opportunity to, you know, to spread the good word about our area. You know, and again, and I hope that at some point when, you know, when you have some time, bring some friends, bring your family, visit us up here, and we can take a little drive around, and we can show you all the places that I'm talking about.
In a heartbeat. My girl, she's a big wine person as well. And for me, I appreciate you coming on, because I got to learn. I have tried a little bit of cool climate varietals, but it's been ages. So, you know, to go through the Petite Pearl, the Frontenac Blanc, the Marquette, it's been a learning experience for me as well. And that's the thing I love about this podcast, is not only learning people's stories and their journeys, right, but learning about different wines, terroir. So it's been just as great for me, Frank. And so yeah, Hessenland Inn, Huron County. I for sure definitely will come by, you know, the moment, yes, the moment my girl is free. She's got a tougher schedule than I do.
Right.
So Frank, I really appreciate it. And again, congrats on how long it's been with the inn. Congrats on the wine and the entire team behind making these wines. And I wish you nothing but, you know, continued success and continued growth and continued just awareness by the wine drinking community that there is alternatives, yes, high quality alternatives. That not every day is, yes, supposed to be a Cabernet day.
That's right. That's, yeah, right. Thank you so much, Matt.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.